Good morning. You're in California Ballroom B, where a panel will be held in a few minutes. Before we begin, will you please take a moment and silence all electronic devices? Thank you. Welcome to the 53rd annual birthday party of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Christian. I am a compulsive overeater and your moderator for this panel. Once again, if you haven't done so already, please silence all electronic devices. Please join me in a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. In keeping with the birthday party theme of change, the topic of this panel is leaving the comfort zone of food, a revolutionary change in our living and thinking. Our speakers today are Eileen S., Jill B., and Evelyn R. Each will share their experience, strength, and hope for 15 minutes. After the speakers have shared, we will have 20 minutes of questions. Baskets will circulate around the room while the speakers are sharing. If you wish to ask a question, write it down and drop it in the basket. We will do our best to get through as many questions as possible. If you would like to direct your question to a specific speaker, please write their name along with your question. You will find paper and pencils spread throughout the ballroom at the end of each row. It says point this way. No, just kidding. Our first speaker this morning is Eileen S. from Portland, Oregon.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Eileen. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm really grateful to be here this morning. Thank you, Christian, and honored to be with these beautiful women. I just wrote myself a little note. I learned this from somebody here in program. I just wrote this tiny note and stuck it in my hand, and it says, God, you speak, because when I get nervous and I don't know what to say, I'm just going to let God so channel through me. Let's see. So change is the topic of the whole weekend, and leaving the comfort zone of food, a revolutionary change in our living and thinking. I thought about what I was going to speak. I didn't plan it a lot, but I thought about what I wanted to talk about, and it's funny that my first sponsor is sitting in the first row right now, and I was thinking about something yesterday that changed in my life, and when I first got into program, and I was having some problems with food. Hello, I'm a compulsive overeater. And I didn't know, somebody suggested to me that I do some writing, and it wasn't actually my sponsor. So the first thought in my head was, well, you're not my sponsor, so I don't have to do it, right? But somehow I decided to do the writing anyway. And I wrote about the idea of what all the food, what if I can't do this? What if, when I get a sponsor, when I start working on this, what if I can't eat the foods I want to eat, and all these things were coming out, most of which I knew that were coming out of me. I knew what they were. And all of a sudden, the line came out of me, how will I survive? And I went, oh! It shocked me, because I had no idea that eating the food I wanted to eat was about survival for me. I knew, and I know I'm a compulsive overeater, but I did not know that it was about survival for me. And that changed something for me. That made me willing in a way that I wasn't willing before, because it's about survival. And now for me, abstinence and working the program is about survival. Recovery is about survival. And food used to be about survival for me. I don't want to go too much in the past, but I'll just say that, you know, I don't remember when I started compulsively overeating, but food was always way more important to me than anybody else around me when I was a kid. And I used to binge, and then I would diet, even as a little kid. And when I look at pictures of myself, I was a relatively normal weight. I've been maybe 20, 25 pounds more than I am now. I don't know why I never gained or lost more. For me, you know, it talks about in our literature that we have periods of control. So I had periods of control, so I'd binging, and then I would diet and binging and dieting. And I think for me it was about I didn't want anybody to know there was a problem. So it was a really good way for me to let you know that everything looked okay on the outside. And that was actually a blessing and a curse, because it took me a long time to get here. I didn't get into program I dabbled before, but I never got serious until I was in my 40s because I thought I didn't have a problem, you know. And when I came here, I thought I had a problem with food, and then there was life. And then what I learned is I have a problem coping with life. That's what food's always been about for me. Eating food was about coping with life. Overeating, eating. I used to eat a dozen donuts, packages of cookies were servings for me. I don't know how to eat one out of a package. That's just, I'm not capable of doing that. That's just not me. That's not the way I was built. That's not my wiring. I don't know why, and it doesn't really matter. You know, there's a new person where I live now in Portland, Oregon, and she said to me, I'm trying to figure out why this is happening. And I said, you know what I was told is, you know what, you don't have to know why. You know why? Because you're a compulsive overeater. And that's what people say to me, you know, when I make outreach calls, and I just want to give a pitch for that, that it's really important to find people in program that I feel safe and comfortable talking to that get to know me. And they can say things to me, honey, you're a compulsive overeater. That's why. So I want to get back to the topic, the comfort zone of food. I love the topic and the name of it because it's an illusion that food is a comfort. You know, it was a comfort as a child. You know, there was a lot of chaos. There was a lot of, my parents were fighting all the time and all that. And it was very scary for me. And like most of us, I was a very sensitive child, and I took in all that energy. And I think I just didn't know how to handle it. And somehow I discovered food became something that just calmed me down. It took away all the voices. It took away all the fear. And it was always sugary, sweet things for me. And there's just so many concoctions my brother and I used to make together. And he's a normal eater, but you know, I definitely was not. And I just remember being very obsessed with food from a very young age. So I remember going to some meetings I've been in program about 15 years now, and over 20 years ago, I remember going to some meetings and I heard the word God, and I was like, I'm out of here. I'm not interested in finding God. And I went out to do a bunch more eating and be more miserable for a while longer. I would do fasts. Here's the insanity of the food for me. You know, I was a vegetarian for a while. I only ate organic fruits and vegetables, and then I'd go out and binge on a dozen donuts and five Snickers bars, you know. Because without this program, I can do that for a couple of weeks. But that's it, you know. And I've been abstinent. It'll be 12 years in February. And, you know, I'll tell you, my first abstinence was no binging, and I did that for about 3 years. And it changed for me, though, because I lost my abstinence. I was in New York City white-knuckling it for about 6 days because there is food everywhere in the street. There's windows, and and I was white-knuckling. I'm not going to eat it. And then, you know what? I ate it, and I binged in New York. So I came back here, and I got a different abstinence. And my first abstinence, as I said, was no binging. After that, I needed to change my abstinence. And the person who ended up sponsoring me after that just said to me, you know, I said, I lost my abstinence. And she said, well, let's figure it out. And that's what we do here. We help each other. She wasn't even my sponsor yet. She became. She said, well, let's figure it out. She said, I do 3 meals a day and 2 snacks. I never wanted to do an abstinence like that. Never, ever, ever wanted to do an abstinence like that. I wanted to pick up food whenever I wanted. And which became a slippery slope for me because no binging, I could have one or two of something and I'd be like, is that binging? Is that not binging? It was a little bit too iffy for me. So I took on the abstinence of 3 meals a day and 2 snacks, and it changed my life. It changed my life because I couldn't pick up food any moment I wanted to. So I had to leave the comfort zone of picking up food at any moment I wanted to, and that forced me to use the program. I brought my big book with me, and, you know, for me, the big book, I heard somebody say yesterday, the big book is a treasure map, and I love that. The big book has everything I need in it. I love the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It has taught me everything I need to know in life, and it says in here, this is a design for living that really works, and that's been my experience. And that doesn't mean that life is perfect all the time. You know, I thought when I got in here and I got abstinent that meant life is supposed to be perfect and fabulous and happy all the time, and it's not, you know. And it pissed me off to hear that. I thought it was supposed to be a guarantee. I got divorced a year and a half ago. That was really painful. I got married in this program. You know, I got married abstinent in this program, which was a miracle, and I don't think it could have happened if I wasn't abstinent and working this program and looking at my part and working the steps. And I also got divorced in this program. And what I've learned here is I get to stay abstinent no matter what. because whatever pain and anguish that I was going through, the food wouldn't have done anything for it except keep me from moving through and growing through the experience. And I think it was you, Lonnie, said to me, you know, we stop emotionally growing when we start our disease, when we start our addiction. And I don't know how old I was, but I was pretty young. So I never learned how to do a whole bunch of stuff in life. But I don't want to tell you. I want you to think I had it all together and I had it all figured out. And so when I got nervous, when I get nervous and anxious and didn't know how to do things, I ate. That was my friend. And the places that compulsive overeating took me, the isolation. Isolation's been a huge part of my disease, and I can still go there in a minute. You know, I can be in a whole group of people and still feel isolated, you know. And what helps me is to just be there for another compulsive overeater. You know, it says in the big book, nothing pays off like work with another compulsive overeater. That gets me out of myself, and I forget all my problems, and suddenly I remember that I have something to give. But as, you know, as a kid, you know, when I started compulsively overeating, that was when my emotional growth stopped. So when I got here, I'm almost 12, you know. So when I got here, you know, I had no, you know, I didn't know how to do a lot of things. And people showed me how to do so many things here. It's a miracle what we do. This is for fun and for free. We help each other. We get to avail ourselves of that help. It's profound to me. I'm sort of all over the place. Revolutionary change in our living and thinking. I love the concept of contrary action, because this program tells me to do things differently than what my head tells me to do. My head tells me to isolate. My head tells me, ooh, 5 more minutes. Oh my goodness. My head tells me a lot of things that aren't very helpful. My one of my sponsors used to say, head enemy, heart friend. Head enemy, heart friend. And you know, and I also heard. First thought wrong. You know, the disease is the first thought. Even in abstinence, even working the program, the first thought that I have is the disease wanting to take over. So that's why I need to pray. That's why I need to connect with my higher power. That's why I need to call you to help me sometimes get out of my head. Sometimes I can do it on my own. Sometimes I need to make calls. Sometimes one tool and one phone call does it. Sometimes I have to make 6 calls and use 9 tools. You know, it just depends. It just really depends on the day. Let's see what else I want to say. 5 minutes. When I came in, so I started to say before, I heard the word God and I was out of here. I was like, I'm not interested in God. So I went out to be miserable and do a whole bunch more eating. And I went to channeled entities. I went to therapists, blah. I went to all these different things to find the answer. And finally, food beat me back into submission. And I came full circle back into Overeaters Anonymous. And I found a higher power here. And I hear people ask questions a lot about how do you find a higher power? How do you know it's your higher power talking to you? I don't have to figure that out. I work the steps. The 12th step, I feel so strongly about this. The 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, that's what happens. I didn't try to have a God. I didn't come in here looking for a God. I came in here looking for some peace from the constant thought of food. That's what I came in here for. And as a result of working the steps, I have a higher power in my life. I don't even know what a higher power is. I can't describe it to you. I know I have it. I talk to it. It talks to me. I am not schizophrenic. But I have a higher power that talks to me. I feel guidance. I feel guidance from my higher power. You know that voice that tells you something and then you ignore it? And, you know, what I find is when I listen to it and it works, I call that my higher power. When I listen to it and it doesn't work, you know, when I don't listen and it doesn't work, I still know it was my higher power. I just know that my will kept me from listening to it. So that's all you got to, if you're new and you don't know what a higher power is, don't worry about it. Just get a sponsor and work the steps. That's all that matters. That's what it will accidentally happen. It says in the second step, we had to admit that OA showed results, prodigious results. So I just had to admit that when I was here and I started doing it, it was working. I cannot not eat donuts for 12 years without this program. I couldn't go a day without eating donuts. And not just one, because I'm not a one donut girl. I'm a 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 donut girl and the big ones. Not the little, I never had a Krispy Kreme donut, by the way. I've never had one. I'm not interested. They're so puny. I mean, those are for amateurs. I mean, there is no way I could eat a donut. Thank you very much. So, you know, I mean, really. So, you know, I can't do this. I cannot do the things that I don't do now about food without this program, without my higher power, without my sponsors, without my peeps. And I just want to say that I am so, so happy to be in this program and to be at this birthday party. I wasn't sure if I was going to come down. You know, I moved up to Portland a year and a half ago. Love it there. If you come up there, please come. I only knew two people in program in Portland, Oregon, and you can go anywhere and feel a sense of community. And now I know lots of people in and out of program, and it's home for me now. But I'm committed to coming to the birthday party each year because I love seeing all of you. It's so important for me. And so if you're new and you don't know if this is going to work, just stick around. You know, stick around. You can take my phone number. I'd be happy to give it to you. Call me. I will call you back if I can't pick up. Just reach out to people who you see have what you want and just talk to them and find out what they do. I had to talk to somebody about my food plan. I don't figure out my food plan by myself. Why? Because if I could, I wouldn't be an Overeaters Anonymous. That's really the bottom line. If I could do my food by myself, I wouldn't be here. It's gotten better for sure. I mean, it is much easier for me to make choices for myself. Does the food talk to me still? Yes, it does. That's why I have to keep going to meetings. If I had, you know, I heard for ism, incredibly short memory. You know, if I had a great memory and I remembered everything, I'd go to 20 meetings, read all the literature twice, and then I'd be done and goodbye. But I have to keep going. And the gift is, in some literature I was reading, the gift is I have to. So the fact that I have this disease that speaks to me every day, I have to keep coming to the program. I have to keep reaching out to you. I have to keep reaching out to my higher power. And it's a gift because I would not have a higher power in my life that gives me peace about so many issues in life way beyond food. I wouldn't have a higher power in my life if I wasn't a compulsive overeater. So this disease has forced me to reach for a higher power that has made me feel a connection in the world that I never felt before. So thanks for letting me share.
And as a reminder, please keep the basket with the question basket circulating throughout the group and the meeting. And our next speaker is Jill B.
What an order. I can't go through with it. Hi, I'm Jill, compulsive overeater and 100 pounder.
Hi.
Hi. Ay, 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 my heart is beating out of my chest. You know, my disease wants to keep me invisible. And for me to get up here and stand behind a podium and a microphone, in front of a microphone with a room full of fellows makes me extremely uncomfortable because you guys see me. So just to get that out of the way. So a little bit of just some history. Well, first of all, thank you, Alma, for asking me to be on the panel today and an opportunity to participate in my recovery. And as Eileen touched on, I don't have a problem with food. I have a problem with life, and food became my solution. What else do I have to say profound? You slam on the brakes of the station wagon, and the ship flies forward. Sorry, I swore. You want to know what you're eating over? Stop eating. So I came in a little over 6 years ago, came in at 327 pounds, and I'm maintaining 160 pound weight loss. And thank you. But all I do is show up. You know, people ask me how I lost weight. I just show up. What do you eat? I just show up and work the steps. And if I'm not working the steps, it's just another damn diet. So when I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about last night, leaving the comfort zone of food and what that meant, I thought, and as I've heard fellows do before, really kind of dissecting the words on what leaving and comfort means for me. So leaving comfort. So in the dictionary, leave means permission to do something, act of leaving or departure. So how that relates to the topic and my recovery, permission to leave the comfort of food and step into my recovery. Comfort means to ease grief, trouble, distress, torment, or torture of. In my recovery, how that relates to It becomes leaving the grief, trouble, distress, torment, torture of food and compulsive overeating, because that's what it was for me at 327 pounds. It was the torture, distress, torment, grief of food and compulsive overeating for me at 327 pounds. So, you know, I could talk about what it was like, what it's like now, how I got here. But for me, as I said, the truth is in the big book for me, and the truth and the answers are in the steps for me. So part of when I was thinking about the topic yesterday and what I would talk about, I went to the big book and I went to the steps. So that being said, I'd just like to read some of that to you and just kind of perhaps elaborate on my experience of that reading. So the first one, let's see, is on the OA 12 and 12, pertaining, it speaks to step 2, page 11. All right, it says, the only trouble was that, and this is in the middle of the paragraph, the middle of the page, the only trouble was that our compulsive overeating progressed as The only trouble was that as our compulsive overeating progressed, it became harder for us to get enough. Instead of bringing comfort, the overeating backfired. The more we ate, the more we suffered, yet we continued to overeat. Our true insanity could be in the fact that we kept right on trying to find comfort in excess food, long after it began to cause us misery. At some point for me, again, you know, I went to food as the solution, and at some point the food backfired on me and it became the problem. Only I didn't know that, and I just kept on eating. And as long as I was eating, I jumped onto that hamster wheel, that merry-go-round, every single time. You know, and then thinking it was going to be different on Monday, thinking it was going to be different on January 1st, thinking it was going to be different on my vacation, after my vacation, you know, full moon, half a moon, whatever. It was always going to be different, and it never was, and that's my insanity. Let's see, page 15, OA 12 and 12, again, pertains to step 2. This is one of my favorites. God could and would deal with our compulsive overeating. Perhaps we didn't believe that our compulsive eating was a spiritual problem, or we felt that God was only concerned with more important matters and expected us to control such a simple thing as our eating. We failed to understand that God loves us in our totality and is willing and able to help us in everything we do. That God will help us with every decision, even food choices and food amounts. I love that one. Let's see, page 24, OA 12 and 12. Talks about step 3, another one of my favorites. We will no longer simply do what we feel like doing or what we think we can get away with. Instead, we will earnestly seek to learn God's will for us, then we will act accordingly. We give up fear and indecision, knowing that if we are sincere, our higher power will give us the knowledge of our best course in life, along with the willingness and ability to follow that course, even when it seems difficult and uncomfortable. God forbid I feel an effing feeling today. God forbid I feel uncomfortable. You know, and there are many, many days, especially early on in my abstinence, I just had to pray for the willingness to be uncomfortable. Again, you slam on the brakes of the station wagon, and it flies forward. You want to know what you're eating over? Stop eating. And for me, all of those feelings, all of that stuff, that junk that I didn't deal with that got me to 327 pounds was in the freezer. So I take it out of the freezer. It's got freezer burn all over, and it just needs a chance to thaw. And there were many, 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 many times that I called my sponsor, and I don't mean this literally, but I felt like I just wanted to hurl myself out the window. I was so uncomfortable in my skin. And those were the days that I just had to pray for the willingness to be uncomfortable and stand still. And as an addict, the biggest challenge for me is to stand still. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to react. Part of my disease is my reaction and my behavior. I don't have to do anything other than be still and be of service and be kind and loving. Love and tolerance is our code today. And for me, this paragraph also meant, and I have a little side note here in the paragraph, game is over, the gig is up. You know, I'm a liar and a cheat with my food. I'm the girl that will call in 2 pieces of chicken when it's really two pieces of a whole chicken. I am the girl that will call in that had a piece of apple pie and try to convince my sponsor it was in the fruit group. You know, that's how I roll. That's what I do. I'm a liar and a cheat with my food. Let's see. Page 24 of the OA. That's the page I just read. Hello. Page 74 of the AA 12 and 12. And this is step 7. Page 74. Oh, here we are. Let's see. The page is talking about humility. This improved perception of humility starts another revolutionary change in our outlook. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. We fled from them as from the plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape via the bottle was always our solution. And again, as I said earlier, I don't have a problem with food. I have a problem with life, and food became my solution. And this paragraph is very telling to me. Again, it's talking about a revolutionary change in my ideas and my thoughts, letting go of old ideas and replacing them with new ideas. Let's see. 74. Oh, and then on 75, still in the AA 12 and 12, step 7, during this process of learning more about humility, the most profound result of all was the change in our attitude towards God. And this was true whether we had been believers or unbelievers. We began to get over the idea that higher power was some sort of bush league pitch hitter that could be called upon only in an emergency. The notion that we would still live our own lives, God helping a little now and then, began to evaporate. Many of us who had thought ourselves religious awoke the limitations of this attitude. Refusing to place God first, we had deprived ourselves of his help. But now the words, "Of myself I am nothing, the Father doeth thou the works," began to carry bright promise and meaning. We agnostics talks about God is everything or nothing. What's my choice to be? That being said, to simplify it for me, I'm either turning towards God in love and light, or I'm turning away from God in fear. And it usually has to do something with self-centeredness, self-righteousness, fear, ego, dishonesty. Towards God in love and light, away from God in fear. Was that 5? Okay. Let's see. Page 36, 37 of the big book, chapter more about alcoholism. Just looking at this morning, it talks about the whiskey and milk story. All right. So again, I'm kind of jumping in the middle of the page here, but it's talking about how one of our fellows in AA lost his sobriety. So again, I'm just jumping in the middle of the page. It says, "I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. I sat down at a table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Still no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart, but felt reassured I was taking the whiskey on a full stomach. The experiment went so well that I ordered another whiskey and poured it into more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another." Then it goes on to say he had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all the reasons for drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea he could take whiskey if he only mixed it with milk. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How could such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? So my partner and I were talking about, and kind of laughing about this morning, and suddenly I was 327 pounds. And suddenly I was eating food that I didn't commit to my sponsor in the morning. And suddenly I was at the Marriott Hotel in my absence stealing their food. And suddenly the lunch that I had packed for myself I didn't want. So, you know, and this was especially true for me. I was thinking about, you know, how this relates in my experience. My partner and I went to another fellowship's convention a couple weeks ago. And she had packed a lovely lunch for us, and a lunch that I had many, many, many times. And it's my abstinence lunch. And there were a lot of people there. And I am uncomfortable with a lot of people. People see me, people talking to me. I want to be invisible. So lunchtime comes, and they have this buffet, and A, there's free food. Free food is on my red list, by the way, because free food is not free for me. Free food is not free for me. It comes at an emotional, spiritual, physical price for me. Free food is not free. Okay. So there's free food at the buffet, and I am out of my tree. All of a sudden, suddenly, my food that I pack, my abstinence lunch, I don't want that. I don't want that. I want this food over here. And that food and my lunch isn't going to be enough. It's not enough. I'm uncomfortable. So the difference today is my uncomfortableness, or my thoughts rather, no longer come in commands. I recognize a thought as it's just a thought. It's just a feeling. Towards God, what would God have me do? God would have me eat my abstinence lunch and sit down. And that's what I did. And I'm going to end on a big book reading. It says it so simply. Page 415, which is part of the chapter of Acceptance Was the Answer. I'm a success today if I don't drink today. Today there's absolutely nothing in the world more important to me than my keeping this alcoholic sober. Not taking a drink is by far the most important thing I do each day. Thank you for letting me share.
And if I could reiterate, if we could keep the baskets moving, because there are people coming in who may not have gotten the baskets, that would be great. And our next speaker is Evelyn. And the bonus of pictures.
The delay was because I was passing out my pictures. My name is Evelyn. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'm delighted to be here. And thank you, Elma, and the committee for inviting me. Wow. I can't believe that I've been coming into this program for over 25 years. I have 25 years of abstinence in this program. I have 115-pound weight loss for most of the years of that 25 years, for 23 and a half years. For some of us, and I mean, it's probably the longest commitment I ever made to anything other than the daughter that I didn't care for. All right, for those of you who know me, they understand what that means. For some of us, or people like me, I was always obese. I was a just under 14-pound baby. When I was 11 years old, I was 100 pounds overweight. You know, for some of us who've been obese, at one point, being obese is like the least of our problems. You know, it's the least of our problems. When I came into program, I had a 10th grade education. I lived in low-income housing with my daughter, who was a runaway. You know, I worked 2.5 full-time jobs for 17 years. I worked a minimum of 14 to 16 hours a day for 17 years. Never missed a day. Couldn't afford to miss a day. I didn't drive. I rode a bike. I rode a bike this way and that way, and this way 8 miles this way and 9 miles that way, and came home. And I did menial work, heavy lifting, working in warehouses. I worked in the backs of psychiatric hospitals. I'm one of those ladies who pushed the broom and cleaned the toilets in the afternoon, you know, in the evening. And I at one point, losing 100 pounds was not at the top of my list. I was never a pretty woman. That's part of it. You know, when you're not pretty, after a while, you know, you just go, yeah, okay, fine. You know, I'm fine with that. You know, I didn't really know that I had a problem. I knew that I was obese, but I didn't know I had a problem. I kind of came into to OA sideways. You know, I didn't come in to lose 115 pounds. You know, I'm not a woman who's into self-care. You know, I comb my hair once a day whether it needs it or not. You know, I bathe, I brush my teeth, and then, I mean, I crash through life. I'm still, even after 25 years of learning to be a little calmer, I still crash through life. You know, and I whirl, and I'm, you know, I'm bigger, taller than I am. For those of you who can't see me, I'm like 5'3". But in my mind, I'm 6 foot tall, and I'm not that long, 6 foot tall woman, you know, with the blonde hair swinging below her legs. I'm Mr. T. That's, I mean, you know what I mean? Until I found out Mr. T is as short as I am, I couldn't even believe that. But I mean, that's who I thought I was. I love food. I happen to love food. I like the way it looks. I like the way it feels. I like the way it tastes. I like, I have pictures of food, full length, full color posters of pie on the walls of my house. Overeaters Anonymous people do not like to visit me. They go, I read cookbooks. I watch the Food Channel. I just don't do any of that. My favorite thing to do when I am by myself and I'm overwhelmed by the world is to go to the grocery store and wander up and down the aisles looking at all the packaging. I love that. People go, you know, I like to go to bookstores too, but when I want the peace or comfort that I need to just calm down, and very few people talk to you in the grocery store, which I'm so grateful for, and I just wander up and down the cereal aisles and look at the packaging. I know the date and time that anybody of any kind of item has changed their packaging over the last 25 years. I mean, I just, you know, and I look at all the pictures, you know, and everything, and I like food. It does it for me. It wraps its arms around me like a warm blanket, and because the world overwhelms me. I'm uncomfortable with people. I'm uncomfortable with, I don't understand. I'm more uncomfortable with women. I don't understand, particularly women who take care of themselves. I don't understand. You know, are we going to talk about Cosmopolitan for the next 20 minutes? You know, I don't understand. I'm more comfortable with men, you know, but most people, they stand too close, they talk too loud, and then they want to touch me. And I just go, you know, I have practiced becoming the woman that I want to be in this program. I'm so grateful for that. When I came into program, I didn't want to lose 115 pounds. I had five things on my agenda, which caused me a lot of problems at the time. I wanted to be able to sleep through the night. I am hyperactive, and for me, 15 minutes of sleep is, you know, oh, man, I had 15 minutes of sleep. You know, and I had 72 voices talking to me in my head constantly, particularly in the middle of the night. They would wake me up, you know, and say, when she says this, then you should say that, and the next time she does this, then make sure you say that, and then do this, and as long as we're up, why don't we paint the house? Okay, let's get up and paint the house, and all 72 of us would get up and paint the house. You know, I'm hyperactive that way. I also had I have sleep apnea. What it is I have a small nose passage, and I'm a mouth breather. So that wakes me up in the middle of the night, and then the people start talking. Once I wake up, I can sleep for 15 minutes. I can sleep for 2 hours. Once I'm up, I'm up. I'm up. Up, and the rest of you have to deal with me. Okay. As long as I'm up, we all need to get up. And we're going to be productive. Going to be productive. So it's hard for me to rest, you know. And so I wanted to have a smile on my face. I have never been told that I have a pretty face. I have rarely been told that I have a pretty smile. And I wanted to have a smile on my face. And I wanted to be able to sleep through the night. And there was... Oh, I wanted to have some peace of mind. Okay, so I come strolling into Overeaters Anonymous and several other 12-step programs because I didn't care, you know. And I was a big proponent because I had worked at psychiatric hospitals. I understood the theory of the 12 steps. because I was one of those people who's pushing the broom at 4 o'clock in the morning, and there's always some skinny guy wandering around in the middle of the night because nobody can get him unless he's tied up in his bed. You know, they let him wander. And he would wander in every place I ever went, some guy, and read the book, big book out loud to me. And they read it, you know, da-da-da-da, this is page such and such. And they'd read, you know, a chapter. And I'm sweeping, I'm cleaning toilets, and they're standing over me. And they're going, and then they would go, what do you think about that? And I would go, well, I think that's a pretty good idea. And they would go, no, that's dumb, I'm not doing it. Oh, okay, you know. But I understood the theory. But I wasn't articulate enough. And so I couldn't explain to anybody that really what I wanted was the promises to come true for me. I didn't know that for 5 years until one time I'm sitting there reading the promises. I go, if I would have been able to say this better, I would have gotten more help quicker. But I didn't. I couldn't. But when I stopped eating, most of you who know my story know I stopped eating out of pure spite. I was told in this program I wasn't going to make it. I was told in this program that I was wasting their time and I should go somewhere else. And I got abstinent and well in this program out of pure spite. Just to spite them all. And I luckily fell in with a group of reprobates and misfits and who explained to me that it was my job to become abstinent in this program. It was my job to get well. To get well in this program in all phases of my life. Emotionally, spiritually, physically, mentally, emotionally, you name it. I was told that I was to get well in this program. And being part of being well was to become abstinent. And for many, I had to come up with these things, and then I had to say them out loud 3 times in a row to the people who took me in. And one of my things was, and they would say, what do you want out of this program? And I would say, I want a happy, healthy mind in a happy, healthy body. And they would say, and what is a happy, healthy body? And I would go, a happy, healthy body is usually normal weighted. Okay? I strove toward part of physical recovery as part of my journey toward wellness. When I stopped eating, that's when I got in trouble. Until then, my life was, it was manageable. My life became horrible. Okay? I stopped eating. And you know what? My hair hurt. My skin itched. I felt like I was going to explode. And I found out how angry I was. I found out how merciless I am. I found out that I am not a nice person by nature. I'm not a nurturing person. I don't understand what that is. I wasn't a good mother. I wasn't a good mother. I didn't beat my child, but that's the only thing I didn't do to her, you know. And I regret that. And then the minutes between the meals, it hurts. And it drops on your forehead like water. You know, and you work really, really hard, and then you find out it's only been 25 minutes since your last meal. And I'm going, holy mackerel. And I was told to use the tools to keep busy. I mean, I was working two and a half jobs, you know. I mean, I was working. And, well, you know, where somebody times you how much you're working, and I still had time, you know, because I had stopped eating. You know, and I didn't know what to do. And then I really became angry, and I disrupted a lot of meetings, and I was difficult to deal with. And you know what? I was told by the people who did take me in that no matter what, no matter what, no matter what, I had a right to be in this program, and I had a right to have my 3 minutes. And I was not responsible for what you say, think, or feel about me. And that saved me. I worked becoming, you know, I always, whenever I speak to women in this program and we're discussing something, they always say, and what would a kind and loving person do? And I always go, how the fuck would I know? I don't know. I wish I did. but I don't know. And I got from a man in this program, and it's funny because I've been seeing him all weekend here, and we don't get along, okay? And we never have for many years. But one time we got into a conversation, and he had said to his therapist, she said something to him, or he said something, you know, about what would a kind and loving man do? And he said, oh, you know, what do I know? And I'm standing there going, yeah, what do we know? And, you know, because him and I are the same. That's why we drive each other crazy. You know, we're angry, short people. You know, don't fool with us, you know. And his therapist said, what would the man you want to be do? He thought that was a dumb idea, but I went, that was like an epiphany for me. What would the woman that I want to be do? Because I came to that in this program, a change in my thinking. I am scared of being kind and loving, but I can be less mean. You know, I am scared about your friendship and everything, but I can be less distant. You know, if I work on being less of the horrible character defects I have, then I become more of the things that frighten me. Because I know deep down inside I'm going to drift away, you know, because Mr. T isn't inside holding me up anymore. I think I'm starting to turn into Bo Derek, but don't tell anybody. You know, I mean, I want that blonde hair swinging below my waist. But anyway, in this program, the woman that I want to be, I strive for that every day now. You know, I was sharing with somebody that my goal now is to age gracefully in this program, you know. And that would be good for me because, you know what, if I'm forced to live to be 104 years old and I'm in some kind of home or something, I want somebody to say, Evelyn, come on, I'm going to pick you up and take you to a meeting, and of course we'll do lunch. And you know why? Because I want to become the kind of woman and the kind of kind person that they want to spend time with, even when I've lost my mind, you know? And they go, I can't imagine, you know, not picking her up and taking her with us because she's in for a good time, you know? I want to do that. I want to be there for each and every one of you. Most of the time I fail at that. Most of the time I do, but I'm better at it now than I was 25 years ago. You know, I want to be a good friend. I practice being a good friend in this program, and I've got friends in and out of this program who would do anything for me. I'm stunned. I am stunned with that. I'm a good mother of an adult child. You think you have trouble with your children when they're younger. You wait until they're older and you learn that their life is none of your business. You know, I am so grateful for the program, for people who have walked across me, across the floor, and said to me, this is how you do things. And I'm so grateful for each and every one of you. I am glad that you took the time to come in here, into this hotel, and share your weekend with me. Thank you so very much.
Struggle not to fall off the back of the thing. Thank you, Eileen and Jill and Evelyn. Thank you so much. We have some questions for you guys. I'll start one with Eileen.
Good.
Can you give us a specific example of how your 10th step helps you stay out of the food?
Oh, that's perfect, because I just did a 10th step this morning. I do a 10th step every day. I have a piece of paper that I wrote a bunch of things in the big book on, and at the very beginning it says, I have to do a 10th step every day because I cannot let things build up. I cannot let things build up, because when they build up, even for a day or two, I want to eat over them, as minor or as big as they are. And a 10th step is brilliant. I did it for a long time, stopped doing it for a while. I'm doing it again every day. and it just keeps me current on whatever's going on, my resentments, my selfishness, my dishonesty, my fears. What do I need to talk to another person about? It's all in the big book. It's right there. I don't have to make it up. That's what I do every day. Thank you.
Oh, good question.
That's a great question. I'll just, sure, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And there's a format in the big book that has asks us a bunch of questions that we can answer for ourselves each day.
This one is a... This question is addressed to all speakers, so you each can give an answer. Yay! How do you deal with that overwhelming feeling that you have to eat something or you'll die?
It's an old idea. For me, it's an old idea. And I have to replace it with a new idea, which is turning towards God. It's not true. It's an old idea. It's an old thought. Call a newcomer. Call somebody else and get out of myself. It's my best answer.
I've never seen a headline in the newspaper that says somebody died between lunch and dinner of starvation because they had a thought and they didn't eat.
Oh, and P.S., I read somewhere it takes something like 27 days before you actually starve to death.
How can I follow that up? I still often get those overwhelming urge to eat. Not often, but on occasion, mainly because my life right now is so chaotic. And what I learned was to take a deep breath and pick up the phone. It's the perfect time to make an outreach call. The perfect time. And it just makes the time pass, and then the feeling will go away.
I could just say my doctor once looked at me because I told her I was an OA, and she's a wonderful doctor. And she said, 27 days, I guess, for the normal size. She looked at me and said, it would take you a year. And that is good words from a professional. To all of our speakers once again, are you able to enjoy your abstinent meals? Then, follow up, how do you view your food now? And follow up, how and when did these views change for you?
I love my abstinent meals. And it drives everybody crazy because I love them so much that it's pretty much what I eat. You know, I mean, and I miss it when I don't. I'm a firm believer is identify the food that satisfies you and gives your body what it needs, because it has to be nutritious, which if you know me, you know that I don't like to eat nutritious food because I'm not a rabbit, and you eat it anyway, but you identify it and just eat it. Eat the food that works for you. Put together something that works for you. I have eaten the same breakfast and the same lunch for 25 years, and I'm loath to give them up. It makes my husband crazy when we travel. It's like, oh, no, you know, no, I don't, you know. It does change, though. I've had to change my food because my circumstances have changed. I am not one to weigh and measure my food. And my circumstances have changed when I stopped riding a bike, and I got a car. Didn't get that extra exercise. When OA sent me back to school, and instead of walking around a warehouse and doing heavy lifting and sweeping floors and whatever, when I sat at a table, you know, and just typed, you know, my circumstances changed. Going through menopause, my circumstances changed. I could eat the same food, but I had to eat a lot less of it. You know, that's not happy. But find something that works for you and then eat it and be happy with it, something that you look forward to.
Okay, now I've forgotten the question.
Well, that was...
Please read that.
Are you able to enjoy your abstinent meals today?
Okay, but, okay, go ahead.
The next one is, how do you view your food now?
Okay. Am I able to enjoy my abstinent meals today? Yes, they bring me a tremendous amount of freedom. I call in my food every morning to my sponsor, and the deal is if it changes, I have to call her and let her know what that is. And that, you know, some people say that's really rigid and there's a lot of structure. For me, that's brought me a tremendous amount of freedom. And what that affords me is to, after I give her my food, I'm out of the food for the rest of the day and I just show up in my life. And I show up in my day, my meals are already planned, and it's just food to me today. I no longer celebrate with food. I went to Paris recently. It wasn't about croissants. I was able to ride a bike to Monet's garden. It was raining. It was about the joy and grace of Paris, and it wasn't about lunch. I don't go to Disneyland and eat my way through churros. It's about the day and the joy and celebration of whomever I'm with. It's not about the damn food for me anymore. And is there a third part to that question?
Oh, yeah. How do you view your food now? And then how and when did these views change?
That's a really good question. When did that change for me? I don't know. It just kind of gradually changed, I think, as I started working the steps. There was just kind of a spiritual change that took place. And I'm sorry, that's my experience, and that's my best answer.
For me, what I've learned is abstinence is not a punishment. Abstinence is not about depriving myself of enjoying my meals. It's about freedom, like Jill said. My meals have changed. There are things I eat now that I didn't used to, and vice versa. I put salad dressing on my salad because I like it and it tastes good. The foods I don't eat because as I've worked the steps and I feel better about myself, as I behave in life that I feel better about myself, I don't want to hurt myself with food like I used to. That's really the bottom line. As I feel better, I don't want to hurt myself with food. But I can't do that in and of myself. I knew that before that it hurt me. That's what working the steps, having a sponsor, going to meet, that's what it's all about. But it's not about deprivation. I get to enjoy my food, so I like my food. Sometimes it gets a little boring. I eat kind of boring. I don't really eat very exotically. I don't really like going to exotic places. I'm so happy to be at California Chicken Cafe. I used to eat there for the first couple of years of my absence. I used to eat there sometimes twice a day, for a couple of years. One of my sponsors gave me for my first birthday of this abstinence, the sponsor I have now, she gave me a roasted chicken with a candle in it. That was because I don't think I could stay absent without chicken. And you know what? I really like chicken. I like it. So I eat what I like. When did it change? I don't know.
No. Thank you. And this is for all. Do you find that the food takes care of itself when you immerse yourself in program? And there are some follow-ups, but we'll... Oh. Do you still need to pay attention to what you eat? And isn't that hard?
No. I plan. Like the other day, I was going somewhere and I was going to be gone at lunchtime. So I plan and I take a cooler and I put lunch in it for myself. That gives me freedom. That gives me freedom because I don't know exactly where I'm going to be, when, and what. I know I got to eat my lunch. So I bring food with me. Is it hard? There's an expression that you hear around here, failing to plan is planning to fail. If I don't plan, if I don't think about it and I go, oh, I'll see what I feel like, doesn't work for me.
I'll tell you what was hard. What was hard was being 327 pounds. That's what was hard. So when I start bitching and moaning about the inconvenience of my recovery and how hard it is, I remember how it was. What else? When I start thinking it's not fair, the fair is in Pomona. And what else would I wanted to say? What else was? Can you read that question?
Do you find that the food takes care of itself when you immerse yourself in program?
Yes.
And do you still need to pay attention?
Yes. If I wake up and I have a particular problem on my mind, first of all, I try to give it to God, and then I take it back, and then I give it to God, and then I take it back. I have to be especially mindful that everything on my plate is what I called into my sponsor. And oftentimes I ask the question, would I be eating this or would I be eating this way if my sponsor was standing in front of me? And that's a really good gauge for me as well.
I can't really add too much more to that. You have to plan and you have to pay attention. And I have to tell you, it's like a muscle. You know, the more you do it, the easier it'll get. But you, if I was raised in this program, when I wake up in the morning, I have to have a plan for my food, I have to plan for, have a plan for my day, and I have to have a plan for the week and hopefully some plans out. You have to have a daily plan. How I'm going to handle the situations of life and fit my food into it. And I have to be aware of that. Because if I get into the sugar, if I get into the cake, if I get into large quantities of food, the world doesn't appear the same to me. And what I hear and what I see is not correct, and I react to something that is false, and it makes my life worse. So I have learned what food does for me, and it should just nourish my body to get me from one meal to the next, from one day to the next, from one week to the next, from one month to the next. It doesn't need to do any more than that. And so I pay attention, particularly when I'm rolling into a situation where downsizing in my company. They want to get rid of 9 people because I can do all that work myself, you know. And it's hard. So I'm seriously looking at my food, you know, even the food that works for me, because I need to be calm and I need to not inflame the situation. And I was raised, you have to have a plan and you have to pay attention.
Thank you. How do you watch a movie, and this is for everyone, how do you watch a movie at home or at the theater without popcorn? And I think that can evolve into how do you do traditional activities that always seem to involve food?
I could really speak to that because popcorn was a food I didn't eat for 11 years. It wasn't on my abstinence. I just made a choice. And by the way, any food I don't eat, nobody told me not to eat it. I had to decide that's a food I can't eat. It doesn't work for me. So I didn't eat food for 11 years, popcorn for 11 years. and I started occasionally having popcorn at a movie. And for me, that's recovery. For me, that's recovery because I can have it sometimes. I don't eat it at home. I need to have a quantity. I need to have a pack, you know, a thing. And so in the last 6 months, I've probably had it 4 or 5 times, and I've enjoyed it. So, but I didn't have it for a long time, and you know what? I didn't miss it for a long time because I just went to the movie and watched the movie. And I'll tell you, though, as a compulsive reader, if there was some, I like to sit in the back row because if there's somebody sitting behind me who's eating popcorn, it bugs the shit out of me.
For me, I don't have snack foods, and that's part of my abstinence. So for me, popcorn is a snack food, so I'd be breaking my abstinence. But specifically, I talked a little bit about it before. I recently went to Paris, and it wasn't about the food. And I go to the movies, and it's not about the food. And I go to Disneyland, and it's not about the food. And I go to restaurants, and it's not about the food. It's I don't know, somewhere along the line, it's just got different for me. And it just became, you know, part of the spiritual process.
When I first became abstinent, I found out that I could not do a lot of things without food. I could not read a book, and I'm a compulsive reader. I could not sit and watch TV without eating. I couldn't go to the movies unless I had the popcorn. And so for the first year and a half that I was in program, after a while, I just stopped doing those things, and I'd pick up my butt and go to the movies, you know, go to a meeting, and because I could not do anything without putting something in my mouth, you know, when I wasn't working. So for me, I stopped reading and I stopped watching TV and I didn't go to the movies. After a while, I started to calm down. I started to have spaces. I go to the movies a lot right now and I never have popcorn. I do have popcorn if I plan for it. You know, if I'm going somewhere and I if I go to a football game, if I go to see the Dodgers, I want to eat the peanuts. You know, I don't need to eat 14 bags of peanuts, but I plan for that into my day and I work around it. But I have to tell you, for me, I could not do a lot of recreational activity by myself without the food in front of me, so I just didn't do it. You know, and I would go to meetings, I would call people, we would walk this girl and walk her dog, you know, and, you know, can I come with you? I was always calling people and say, can I come over there? Can I do something? Because I couldn't. So So, but it does go away. And then you become more comfortable with it, and you go to movies and you don't eat the popcorn. You know, or you don't, you go to parties and you don't eat this, you don't eat that, because it's not what you do. And it becomes more of a better habit than what you had.
Thank you. And this, all these are for everyone. So I'm still struggling with overeating. When you feel the compulsion to overeat, how do you calm yourself down to prevent taking that first bite that will lead to a binge?
I think this goes back to, I was trained in this program to use the tools. You know, I was trained, get those phone numbers. Now you can put them on your cell phone and you can just hit a number. Before we used to have to rotary dial everything. But, I mean, just make that phone call. I also am a big believer in the science of compulsive overeating. And I know that for me, that it takes 25 minutes for that feeling to go away. That, you know, it, when I finish eating and, you know, and for some reason, mainly because in my head it's not enough, I know that it takes 25 minutes to go away. So by the time I make a phone call and put the dishes, wash the dishes, you know, 25 minutes have gone by and I'm fine. I know that about myself because I was raised to keep charts in this program. But use the tools. That's what they're there for. That's a perfect opportunity. Perfect opportunity to do some writing, to, you know, get up and clean your house. Wait for the, and figure out how much time you need to kill. I found a big freedom in knowing that. I go, oh, it's 25 minutes. Okay, I'm fine. You know, rarely happens anymore, but I still get it, and I know. I pick up the phone, make a couple calls, I'm good to go.
For me, the ocean brings me a lot of serenity. So I remember early on in my abstinence, again, and I kind of talked about it at the podium, there were moments where I wanted to just jump out the window. I was so uncomfortable with myself and in my own skin. So I came up with this visual for me, like I was bobbing around in the middle of the ocean, treading water, barely able to catch my breath, you know, head below water, but still just kind of barely surviving. So somebody can throw like a life raft to me or a life vest, which to me was my analogy of God. But I chose a boogie board. And so what I do is just hold, in those moments, I remember just visualizing, closing my eyes and just holding on to the boogie board, holding on tight, i.e. God, and just riding those rough waves into the calm beach. And it may sound like a lame analogy, but it got me through many, many, many times. And, you know, as I said earlier, those are just really, really, it's just a matter of being uncomfortable and just being willing and asking for the willingness to be uncomfortable.
Thank you. This is to everyone. How do you end your meals, i.e., how do you stop eating after eating?
I have a clear window because I was, you know, asking my sponsor, well, what is a binge? What, you know, what does that look like? You know, did I binge on this meal? And what she did and what I now do is I have a window of, first of all, I'm pretty consistent on the times that I eat during the day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's important for me as a compulsive overeater because, you know, I'm of my best ideas that I have some structure around when I eat today, eat for the day. That being said, my meals are no longer than 30 minutes. So there's a clear beginning and there's a clear end. 30 minutes, that's it. Clear beginning, clear end. And after 30 minutes, it's done.
That's pretty much how I was trained too, I evolved into my meals have to be 4 to 5 hours apart, you know, and my meals have a clear beginning and clear end. For me, it's 20 minutes. You know, I'm a fast eater. And licking the plate, you know, and then is it clear? And I learned that if I still, it's sometimes it's just the flavor in your mouth. Get up and brush your teeth. That I find works really well too. My girlfriend swears by it. After every meal, she brushes her teeth. She knows her meal's over with. You know, I didn't know that.
Most of the time, when the food's done, I'm done. occasionally I want more. And most of the time I don't get anything. On occasion I do. But I like what we talked about with regard to the tools, and I guess I'll speak to that just for a moment. I can't figure all this out and make it all go away myself, because that's the disease. I'm powerless over the disease of compulsive overeating. So that's, those times where I want to eat something beyond what's okay for me, that's when I use the phone. That's the biggie tool for me at that time. So, thanks.
Thank you. If you can suggest anything to a person who is struggling, what would that be? That one pinpoint focus.
Lots and lots of meetings. I went to 7 to 9 meetings a week for the first, I don't know how many years. Lots and lots of meetings, reaching out to people, making phone calls. Because you're not alone. I mean, I came in here as a self-sufficient, I can do it all myself, nobody's like me person. And what I come to learn is I'm like every single one of the people in this room. Okay.
I came in here, again, a little over 6 years ago, desperate and out of ideas. So that being said, I try to wake up every morning desperate and out of ideas. Can you read the question again? I'm sorry, I have something else to say.
If you can suggest anything to a person who is struggling, what would that be?
Okay. Get out of your own damn way and surrender.
And get somebody to work with you. It doesn't have to be just one person, but particularly if you don't know where else to start with your food. Find somebody who has what you want and just talk to them to help develop some kind of a food plan that works for you. I have to tell you, I'm a big believer in a food plan. It could be something as casual as 3 meals a day, nothing in between, or it can be highly structured. Find something that works for you and don't apologize for it. I can't tell you how often people have tried to talk me out of the way that I eat. Or say, I sat down with lunch with somebody the other day and they said, are you still eating that way? This is somebody in program. I go, yeah. And she goes, why? I go, because it works for me. It worked for me yesterday. I'm going to do it today. It's easy. And I mean, I don't eat anything bizarre. But find somebody, if that's and it doesn't have to be one person. Having a single sponsor did not work for me. I had a group of people. I had somebody who talked to me about my food, and I have to tell you, it was not the most successful person in this program. He died in this program, 450 pounds. He couldn't cobble together 92 hours of abstinence in the years that I knew him. He was invaluable to me, invaluable to me. He knew food inside and out. He knew what it did to you and how it did to you and how it affected you emotionally, physically, and spiritually. He was invaluable to me. I miss him. I have very little trust in almost anybody else who's in this program since he's been gone. But I hear his voice in my head. I talk to other people about my money. I talk to other people about my relationships. I have not found the one person who met all my needs. And don't apologize for that. This is your program. If you're going to be greedy, if you're going to be over-compulsive about anything, develop a program that works for you. This program is all about you. It's not about us. We're here to help you. We would do anything we can for you, and it's okay if you say, no, I'm not going to do that. Gather as much information as you can, but get somebody to work with you with your food. It can be an outside source, too. And try to get a handle on that, and then try to deal with the rest of it. And the rest of it is going to come up, and you'll know exactly what it is once you start to follow a food plan. And then find somebody to help you. Just turn to the person next to you. Say, do you have an experience with this? And get as much help as you can. But build something that works for you.
Thank you. People say, act as if. What exactly does that mean, and how has that helped you in your program?
Act as if. I act as if everything's fine all the time. I act as if there's a God who cares for me. I act as if this, for many years in this program, I acted as if this program would work for me. You know? I even when I was the proof that it did work in all aspects of my life, I acted as if because I didn't believe in this program. When I don't know what to do, more and more, particularly the last 2 years, I turned to the St. Francis prayer because my behavior is a very important part of my growth in this program because I can't remember what to do, you know. And it's very specific, you know, where you find this, do this. You know, where you find doubt, so this. And I can't even remember it because I just read it this morning. But I act as if. I act as if I'm well and I've become well. I act as if I'm a kind and loving person and I'm less mean.
Thank you. Have you ever hit bottom in abstinence, and what did you do to pull yourself out of it? Or hit a new bottom in your abstinence?
I haven't hit a bottom in my I've hit an emotional bottom in my abstinence, but I have had my abstinence fail to work, continue to work for me. Okay? How I was raised in this program is you develop a plan that works for you, whether it's a physical, emotional, daily plan that works for you, and then when it no longer works for you or stops working, you need to change it. What I learned to be in this program was more flexible. I've changed my abstinence 5 times in this program. You know, I discussed that. When I stopped exercising on somebody else's employment dime, I had to, you know, I gained weight eating the same food that I had lost 115 pounds on, you know. When I got older, I had to start eating more nutritious meals because my food plan wasn't working. I've hit emotional bottoms in this program. You know, life happens to you. And I've had to change my food because I found out that some foods that were safe for me failed, were not working for me. They were coloring my judgment, and I had to change that. And it wasn't something that happens overnight. I go into complete denial, and then I know it's there, and then I fool with it and fool with it, and then I don't do anything. And finally, you know, I do something, and then I'm unhappy because I had to make a change until I got used to it. You know, that has been my way, path in this program. And I think that's why it's good to come to events like this, because you can kind of get like some kind of a checklist. You know, how am I doing? That's what I use this for, is how am I doing? I hear new ideas. I go, gee, I stopped doing that. I shouldn't start to do that. You know, I'm unhappy right now. I'm desperately unhappy and I'm really angry, you know. So I came here and I had a lot of people speak here and share ideas with me on how to deal with that. Because I learned to be flexible and to at least be open to new opportunities to get the quality of life that I need and I want in this program.
I'm not really sure what the question means as far as a bottom on abstinence. I can only speak with my experience, and I've had the same abstinence for 6 years, and I haven't broken my abstinence for 6 years, and that abstinence works for me. I do have a red, yellow, and green food list, which is like a food plan. Red are cautionary foods, which means I'm dancing on the edge of a knife if I eat those. There's yellow foods that probably should really be on the red foods, quite frankly, and then there are green foods, and those will interchange. But my abstinence is working for me, and it's been the same since I came in.
The abstinence that I have now really works for me. As I said, I had an abstinence before this, and it worked for me till it didn't work for me anymore. And that I had to reevaluate what is my new abstinence going to be. So, but you know, about 2 or 3 months ago, food was really speaking to me. I had a lot going on in life, which isn't an excuse. You know, I stay absent no matter what. But I was entertaining all kinds of interesting food notions in a way, and eating more at some of my meals in a way that I didn't need to be doing that. And, you know, when I started doing the 10-step, get my butt to more meetings. It's, you know, it's the tools. It's the tools and the steps that get me back. And when I started getting honest, I had to look at some issues that were going on with me. You know, it's not, it's about the food, but it's not about the food. The food cleared up. I made choices that felt better to me.
Thank you. What do you do when you just can't seem to get abstinent no matter how hard you try? Or what would you recommend to someone who's going through that?
I don't have any experience about that, but what I would say is just don't leave. There's no chance out there. None. Zero. At least you have a chance in here. So just keep coming back and showing up.
Okay, thank you. In abstinence, how do you deal with difficult people, family members, coworkers, etc.?
I'll share with you something with my mom. My mom would, if I went out to lunch with my mother, she would constantly comment on my food. Ooh, you're going to eat all that? She doesn't know about programs, she doesn't get it, she's whatever. And she would make these comments about my food all the time. And I would just say, Mom, could you please not comment on my food? And she'd go, oh, I'm not. And then she would comment on my food. And, you know, and it, I just would speak up for myself, but I would keep eating the food I was eating. You know, I used to go to this networking meeting every Friday morning, and I would eat a really good abstinent meal that I ate every Friday morning for 10 years. And sometimes people would say, God, you're eating a lot of food. And you know what? I just ate my food. Difficult people, you know, there's difficult people. I was just having a conversation with my friends this morning. There's difficult people all over the place. I don't have to eat over them because if I eat, I'm just hurting myself. So dealing with difficult people is difficult, but it really doesn't have anything to do with my food. And I need to talk to people about it if there's something going on so that I don't make it affecting, so it doesn't affect my food.
Let's see. I try not to take their inventory. I try to keep my side of the street clean because, God forbid, I have to make an amends to a difficult person. So I keep my side of the street clean, try to be as loving as I can, not take it personally. You know, I find that, you know, I'm an addict. Everything is about me. I'm the piece of crap that the world revolves around. So, and I find that most things aren't about me. So just knowing that helps a lot. I want to talk a little bit about my mother, who's 75 years old, who is in her own disease actively, I think, and how I deal with that is I don't. I had a conversation with her, and I said, I can't get in the ring with you when you're in your disease. I'm going to lose every time. And I knew that if I got in the disease with her, my abstinence is at stake, and that's a really high price to pay for that, so I just don't. So drew some boundaries around that. So
difficult people. I find all people difficult, but particularly now. See, what I have been trained to do is I do take their inventory. I look at them. I try to get myself into a quiet place, and I look at them, and I can usually and usually I can go, you know, gee, you know. She's cute, she's this, she's that, he's tall, he's got a lot of money and everything. Most of those people are unhappy. My goal in this program is to be happy. And if I can do that and see their point of view, and I realize how much they're stuck in where they are and they don't have the opportunities to change that I do, I don't want their life. And it makes them so much easier for me to deal with. We also have I also pray for people, okay? And I pray for them, you know, to have peace and harmony and good fortune, you know, and get everything they want, you know, far away from me. You know, I want you to get that better job. I want you to get more money so you move to an office in Pasadena and not make my life miserable. You know, everybody at work, we have that situation going on right now, and everybody's going, oh, I hope he doesn't get that job. You know, he doesn't deserve it. I'm going, no, we want him to get that job because he's made us miserable for 10 years. We want him out of here. You know, so let's pray for him. And, you know, goddamn, on Friday he got the job. You know, we're having a party to go, you know, to send him away. You know, I'm thrilled. And once everybody kind of got into that, it was, you know, is why not? Why not? But most times if I could get myself to a place with difficult people, my daughter weighs 350 pounds.
She knows OA's not going to work for her. She's a big proponent of OA for me, you know. But she keep, you know, she's 42 years old. She's already had, you know, she had her first heart attack when she's 30. You know, I learned it's none of my business. You know, it's tough. It's tough. This is what the program is for, is to come in here, discuss those things, find out other people's ideas, do the writing, call people up, talk it over. This is what this program is for. And because it has nothing to do with our abstinence, food's not going to make it better. You know, food is not going to make it better. You can throw a muffin at somebody, it still doesn't make them better. And I've done that, you know. And we can't afford to do that for ourselves because we're entitled to a quality of life, okay? And that includes difficult people, difficult family members, you know, things happen. And this in the books that we have and the people here, we have a way to figure it out, how to act with kindness and graciousness, less anger, less meanness, some kind of consistency, so we lay in bed at night not talking to ourselves and having to apologize to people that we have no, you know, I hate to apologize to people I have no respect for, you know. So I go out of my way, you know, not to have to do that.
Thank you. And I think this will be probably our last question. We'll make it quick. How do you connect to your higher power on a daily basis, and do you find that it helps with your abstinence and serenity?
Yes and yes. Let's see, how do I connect with my higher power? I get up at 6-ish, do my reading and my writing for my sponsor, call her at 6:30, and give her my food. Then I have a number of sponsees that I talk with. And I usually, depending on what day of the week is, will walk to a meeting. It's about 2.5 miles. So I call them my God walks, and I walk to a meeting, and I sit there at a meeting. So that gives me a good, I don't know, 2.5 hours to start the day. And, you know, I just completed the 12th step, but in working my 11th step, I was really, you know, how can I improve my higher my contact with God? And what does that look like? And I was looking for, you know, some sort of spiritual guidance or some sort of church or some sort of religion. But I have to tell you, for me, I started taking yoga, and that really connected the dots for me, and being able to move my body with my breath today and connect with that higher power and do some meditation before and after has really, you know, really kept me connected on a consistent basis.
I get up every morning and I do a bunch of reading, and it's changed over the years. I used to read 4 different meditation books in the morning, and it's just been kind of crazy. I have a lot of those. I don't do any of them right now for some reason, but I have some specific prayers that I do every morning, and I've got them written on little funky pieces of paper, and I have them in a paper clip, and my compulsion wants to copy them all on a pretty piece perfectly, but I don't, and that feels spiritual for me. So I pray, I meditate each morning, and I use a timer because I kind of go off. I also, first thing, as soon as I get out of bed, I fall onto my knees. Somebody told me that. I used to always get on my knees, but I used to go do stuff for it. Oh, we're done. We can talk more later. You can ask me.
And that is all the time we have for questions. Please help me thank our speakers, Eileen, Jill B., and Evelyn, for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with all of us today. After a moment of silence, please stand where you are and join hands as we say the Serenity Prayer together. But we'll have our moment first.